Good morning, and welcome everyone to Crédito Real's third quarter 2021 earnings conference call. Crédito Real issued its quarterly report on Wednesday, October 27, 2021. If you did not receive a copy via email, please do not hesitate to contact us in Mexico City at 5255-5228-9753. It is important to note that the presentation and MP3 recordings referred to in this call will be available at www.creal.mx. Before we begin the call today, I would like to remind you that the information discussed in today's call may include forward-looking statements on Crédito Real's future financial performance and prospects, which are subject to risks and uncertainties. Actual results may differ materially, and the company cautions not to rely unduly on these forward-looking statements. The company undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statement. With us this morning from Crédito Real, we have Mr. Carlos Ochoa, CEO, and Ms. Renata Gonzalez, IRO. They will discuss the more important strategic, financial, and operating aspects of the third quarter 2021. I will now turn the call over to Mr. Ochoa.
Thank you, operator. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us. Before we jump into this quarter's performance, I would like to take a moment and discuss the strategy that Crédito Real began to implement at the beginning of this year. A little over 9 months ago, we made a twofold commitment that involved implementing best international corporate governance practices and refocusing on our best performing business segments to maximize the company's value to its investors and to better manage our risk. This strategy started with the decision to refocus on the core aspects of our business, including prioritizing the value of our portfolio over its volume. Given the changing economic environment, we felt we needed to refocus on this unique value proposition, particularly by limiting risk in the non-fundamental aspects of our business. As previously communicated to the markets, the changes approved by our shareholders include changes in the composition of the board to facilitate a more streamlined decision-making process in line with international best practices in terms of corporate governance. This transformation was led by the management team with the support of our board of directors. But Crédito Real has been able to take this vision one step further thanks to the leadership and support of our shareholders, as demonstrated by the changes recently approved during an ordinary shareholders meeting, which provide us with an ample mandate to continue this transformation in the coming months. As part of our strategy to unleash value and minimize risk, during Q3, we focused our endeavors on the more stable and lower risk-adjusted return portfolios. This disciplined shift in the origination throughout the year is already bearing fruit. In this quarter, our financial margin increased by double digits compared to last year's. Additionally, to optimize our best-performing business segments, our shareholders decided on the sale of the simple loans and lease portfolio of Crédito Real Arrendamiento, as well as the sale of the equity interests of Crédito Real USA Finance. As such, management has started taking concrete steps to implement this shared vision. As recently announced to markets, we have reached an agreement to sell approximately 13% of our Mexico's SMEs portfolio, according to figures of this quarter, subject to specific conditions, including the corresponding regulatory approvals. The price of the sale was agreed for the outstanding balance of the assets plus a premium, which is equivalent to an amount of up to 1.5 billion pesos. As directed by our shareholders, the proceeds of these sales will be destined to repurchasing our equity and debt securities to enable the company to capitalize on market opportunities and increase value creation. Especially in the current context, buying back bonds will not only translate into earnings for the company, but will also be an important step towards bolstering our investors' confidence. In the same vein, Crédito Real continues to be committed to maximizing our company's resources. This means that whenever reasonably and financially viable, we will continue to take firm steps towards strategically deleveraging the company. In this regard, Crédito Real considers the optimal cash balance to be 1.5 billion pesos. During this quarter, we successfully refinanced approximately $2.2 billion, which adds up to approximately 74% of our debt maturities scheduled for 2021. This was reflected in the significant decrease of our total debt, impacting positively our debt-to-equity ratio, which contracted 0.2 times quarter-over-quarter to 3.0 times, a downward trend that we expect to strengthen by the proceeds to be raised from the strategic actions approved by our shareholders' meeting, and which is in line with the strategy outlined at the beginning of the year. We have also started the natural refinancing process for the Swiss bond, which, as you all know, is due in February 2022. The different market signals that we have received in this regard have been positive. Overall, our company's financial position remains stable, with a balance similar to that experienced prior to the pandemic, signifying the end of the negative carry recorded over the first half 21. We have also continued our efforts to advance transparency in our communications, and we have received recognition from leading organizations. We were honored to be selected by Institutional Investor as one of the three best companies in LATAM in its 2021 executive team rankings. Finally, before I hand it over to Renata, I wanted to take a moment to comment on the recent developments related to the single outlying non-performing loan in our SMEs portfolio. Ever since this loan was reclassified as non-performing per our auditor's request, back in January 2021, besides providing thorough information on the loan during the last two earnings calls and through a couple of special reports, we immediately undertook efforts to resolve the issue as soon as possible, considering how long certain collection procedures can take in our geographical context. Although this event is not a strictly part of Q3, as it happened a few days ago in mid-October, I am pleased to inform you that Crédito Real subsidiary Crédito Real Arrendamiento entered into a settlement agreement with the company Nuncio Accipiens to obtain all Nuncio's rights in the relation to certain equity interests of Sistema Radiopolis and Corporativo Coral, as well as the collection rights of the later in lieu of payment of the past due loan of 695 million pesos. This event has an important positive impact on certain key company indicators, including a decrease of approximately 120 basis points in the company's NPL ratio. According to this quarter's figures, and eventually, a significant improvement in our cost of risk and debt to equity ratio. A return to pre-pandemic levels for NPLs now looks within reach. In the coming months, we will seek to monetize these assets. However, the provision funds for the loan, up to 45% of its amount, will remain untouched on the company's books until we have effectively monetized them. This follows a conservative approach to reporting the company's financials. More broadly speaking, the company's NPL ratio stabilized on a sequential basis even after Mexico faced more stringent social restriction measures in early August, thanks to close oversight and enhanced collection procedures. Indeed, all business segments recorded high level of collections, with payroll having its best quarter since Q4 2019. We continue to meet our prior commitments. With regards to the NIM, while we set the objective of ending 2021 between 13% to 14%, we now close this quarter above 12%, but we expect to maintain this metric of our product mix. Furthermore, in regard to our SMEs portfolio concentration, the announced sale lowered the concentration to 17% of our total portfolio, positioning us one step further towards meeting our objective of closing 2021 around 15%. In sum, these positive developments point the strong position of the company as we close out the third quarter. While there is much work to be done, with our disciplined efforts already bearing fruit, the final stretch of 2021 for Crédito Real looks fundamentally different than the beginning of the year, and definitely 2022 looks promising despite all the challenges the sector faced during this year. We thank you for your continued trust in the long-term vision of the company. With that, I will conclude my remarks and turn it over to Renata.
Thank you, Carlos. Good morning, and thank you all for being part of this quarterly earnings conference call. As a reminder, please note that figures used in this analysis are still comparable on a year-over-year basis and sequential basis, as the sale of our stake in the businesses mentioned by Carlos has yet to be formalized. In the third quarter, interest income increased 26% year-over-year, from roughly 2.5 billion pesos to 3.2 billion pesos, reflecting a more favorable economic environment compared to that of the same period last year, and a higher traction of the origination throughout the year, particularly within payroll. Interest expense totaled 1.6 billion pesos, up 42% when compared to 1.1 billion pesos recorded in the same period last year, derived from the issuance of the senior notes 2028, an upward adjustment in credit spreads and interest rates carried out by the major central banks in the last months. As a result, the financial margin posted an annual increase of 15%, amounting to 1.6 billion pesos, following the capital redeployment strategy focused on most profitable businesses, the yield recovery in the United States businesses, and the contribution for the portfolio acquired from Banco Ahorro FAMSA. Net provision for loan losses increased 9.1% year over year, totaling 550 million pesos. This variation is essentially a result of the normalization of payroll and used cars. The coverage ratio contracted 85 percentage points, standing at 132%. It is relevant to note that these figures still include the temporary effect of the defaulting customer recording in the SME's portfolio, from whom we recently received the corresponding settlement in kind. We expect to monetize the transfer assets in the following quarters and then see a further normalization level for this metric. Administrative and promotion expenses, excluding crédito real arrendamiento depreciation expenses, totaled 902 million pesos, up 14% when compared to 195 million pesos recorded in the same period last year. This variation is largely linked to the portfolio size, especially when looking at the faster origination phase in key business segments, particularly payroll, for which we introduced more attractive incentive schemes to boost growth. Net income totaled 204 million pesos, representing an annual increase of 2.4% and expecting to see a higher traction from the best risk adjusted products. As of September 30, 2021, return on average equity remained unchanged when compared to the same period last year, at 4.5%. Excluding the perpetual notes effect, these metrics stood at 5.9%, while return on average assets was 1.1%, in line with what was recorded at the end of third quarter 2020. The capitalization ratio contracted 140 basis points on an annual basis, attaining a 32% rate of September 30, 2021. The funding cost was 11.3% at the end of the quarter, 290 basis points above the 8.4% recorded in the same period last year, reflecting the end of the pandemic-induced easy monetary policy in major economies, including Mexico, on the one hand, and the company's largest debt that follows the issuance of the senior notes due 2028, on the other. Moving in broader detail to the analysis of the portfolio dynamics, consolidated total portfolio amounted to 57 billion pesos at the end of the third quarter 2021, growing almost 9% year over year and 3.3 quarter over quarter, largely supported by the origination and shipment at payroll and used cars, thanks to the more favorable business environment at all countries where we operate. Consolidated non-performing loan ratio was 3.8% at the end of this quarter, 200 basis points above the 1.8% recorded in the same period last year, but in line with the previous quarter. It is relevant to remember that this figure includes the impact from a major defaulting client in the SME segment. Adjusting for this loan, the non-performing loan ratio was 2.6%. As we mentioned in our latest special report, delinquency has been improving across the board and is expected to accomplish our estimated range of 3.2% to 3.8% towards year-end. Payroll portfolio totaled 33 billion pesos, up 11% over the same period last year. This performance reflects our origination focus, as it features better risk-adjusted returns under the current macroeconomic environment, coupled with the contribution of our partnership with FAMSA. Delinquency in this portfolio was 1.7%, remaining below the 2% mark, aligned to that of the same quarter last year and with a slight improvement on a sequential basis. Used cars portfolio reached 4.5 billion pesos, growing 12% on an annual basis, driven by the high demand for used cars in Mexico and in the United States. The non-performing loan ratio of this segment was 1.2%, remaining at a sound level, even for pre-pandemic standards. SME's loan portfolio marginally decreased 0.1% year-over-year, totaling 13 billion pesos, as origination was focused on best-performing portfolios as factoring. Instacredit loan portfolio grew 3% year-over-year to reach 5.5 billion pesos, supported by the economic reactivation and initiatives deployed to incorporate additional on-bank clients of solid credit profiles, with delinquency reaching 5.1%. Turning to the balance sheet, as of the third quarter 2021, total assets increased 4.2% over the same period in 2020, amounting to 77 billion pesos, following the consolidated loan portfolio growth. Cash and investment in securities amounted to 1.7 billion pesos, decreasing 31% against last year. These variations follow the intensive deployment of proceeds from the senior notes issued in January to support the portfolio growth as business conditions have improved in the past months and to strategically deleveraging the company. Our intention is to hold a cash balance better aligned to our pre-pandemic levels that will be suitable for the company's operation and growth plans. Our cash balance is aligned with the levels recorded in the last 6 years. The outstanding debt totaled 55 billion pesos, up almost 5% on an annual basis, largely explained by the placement of the senior notes 2028 and credit lines drawn down over the last 12 months. On a sequential basis, the debt decreased 2.4% in line with our efforts of decreasing the leverage. To conclude, as of quarter end, stockholders' equity totaled 18.5 billion pesos, an annual increase of 4%, as a result of the already discussed factors. With this, I conclude my remarks. Now let me turn back the call to the operator to open the line for Q&A.
Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Your first question is coming from Ernesto Gabilondo. Your line is live.
Thank you. Hi, good morning, Carlos and Renata. Thanks for your presentation. I have a couple of questions from my side. The first one is a concern we have been getting among investors related to the cash reduction. When looking to the quarter, the cash was, cash and investment securities were reduced by around 50% quarter over quarter, while total borrowings declined only 3% quarter over quarter. So I believe the rest was used for loan growth. On the other hand, you mentioned you have reached an agreement to obtain around 1.5 billion pesos from the sale of the Mexico's SME portfolio. However, I think it's subject to the regulator's approval. And considering that the regulator is understaffed, do you think it could be approved before December 5, in which they will enter the holidays? And what do you think will be the month in which you think you can be receiving that cash? And also related to this and another concern again from investors, can you share with us if banks are still willing to increase the credit lines to Crédito Real? I think any clarification on this will be very helpful. Thank you.
Yes, hi Ernesto. I'll address the first two questions. Regarding the liquidity, I think it's important to note that the last two quarters we have an excess of cash given that we have the unused proceeds of the senior notes 2028. However, you can see that also we were having a significant impact on the financial margin regarding negative carry. So at this point, the management strategy is to make the most efficient use of our cash, which means to grow our operations and also to prepay in debt. So how we feel comfortable for the next month and next quarter is that we need to have a cash balance of around 1.5 billion pesos in line with the cash that we ended this quarter. Regarding the second question about the SME sale, as you mentioned, we still need regulatory approvals, and we think that given the geographical context, it could be taking something around 2 to 3 months in order to have all the approvals.
Yes, and finally, Ernesto, you know, addressing your last question regarding the banks, what I can tell you at this point is that we continue to see the support from most of the banks, and we are looking to the best options for the company, right? Not only in terms of, you know, secured versus unsecured lending and things like that, but what makes us, you know, feel confident about this is that they continue to support as they have done throughout not all the pandemic, but in the past years. And with the figures that we are showing, the improvements not only in the NIM, but in the performance of the book altogether, we believe that that's not going to become an issue in the coming months.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Renata and Carlos. Just let me make another last question. And this is from an eventual competition from Banco del Bienestar. We have seen that in the past, when it was Bansefi, they offer interest rate at around 15%. And I remember that implied a prepayment of only 1% of Credito Real's loan portfolio. And on that time, Bansefi lacked of infrastructure and funding. However, now it seems that Bienestar is building an attractive deposit base, as they will be the ones responsible to distribute the government social programs. They are also developing a remittances product, and they also pretend to distribute all the payroll of the government employees. We are aware that Bienestar is not lending for the moment. However, considering that they will get access to cheaper funding, and that they pretend to have the largest number of branches attending the low-income segment, how is Credito Real preparing to offer competitive interest rates against Bienestar at some point? Thank you.
Yeah, well, Ernesto, that's an interesting question. And the best way to address that, and based on our experience, as you mentioned, with Bansefi in the previous years and in similar circumstances, what we know at this point is that our customer base, what they value the most is service. I mean, if you think about, specifically if you think about the payroll business, you do not compete in that business, you know, with lower interest rates, because, you know, a major change in the interest rate, it doesn't represent on a monthly basis, doesn't represent much for the customer. So that's definitely one key aspect. And if you continue to think about our competitive strengths, you know, having the largest sales force, specifically speaking for the payroll business, the largest sales force in the country, that definitely puts us on a good position to compete with them, if that is the case. On the other hand, I mean, let's bear in mind as well that setting up such a huge branch network, that doesn't happen overnight, and definitely that's going to, you know, have, definitely that implies that they will face, you know, operational restrictions and so on. And in sum, what I can tell you is that we feel confident that we are able to compete with them, you know, mostly by the service that we provide to our customers, as we've done in the past.
Thank you, Carlos. And are you evaluating any digital transformation to compare against that they are doing more physical branches infrastructure or eventually to other fintechs that are also approaching the low-income segment?
Yes, definitely. That's something that we are considering. And look, one of the good things that the pandemic left to us was the transformation, the digital transformation of all our operational procedures. You know, as you know, I mean, we've been working, you know, we've been home officing for the past year and a half or more than that, and I don't see that our operation, you know, our operation staff is going to be back at the office. What I'm trying to say is that we are halfway, I mean, that the fintech aspect of our operation is already in place, and we are definitely building it up. So, I mean, that's one of the positive aspects that the pandemic left us. So I think that we will be able to, you know, to meet all the, you know, the competition that we might face at some point by the fintechs.
Perfect. Thank you, Carlos.
Thank you, Roberto.
Thank you. Your next question is coming from Nicholas Riva. Your line is live.
Thanks, Carlos and Renata, for the chance to ask questions. There are four topics I wanted to ask you about. The first one, on the sale of the SME loans, I think the press release said that you are selling for up to 1.5 billion pesos. I wanted to confirm if actually the agreement is for 1.5 billion pesos or for a lower amount. And also the use of proceeds. You said that the idea was with these divestments to use the money to buy back bonds and shares. I wanted to ask you if the priority of these 1.5 or up to 1.5 billion pesos would be to use them for the maturity of the Swiss bond in February. And also if you are done with the sale of SME loans in Mexico with this, and then what will be pending would be used car loans in the U.S. Second question on collections. So you reported cash collections of 9.2 billion pesos, higher from prior quarters, originations of 7.2. So I was thinking, well, then there should be a decline in the loan book, but it actually grew. I wanted to confirm that the 9.2 billion pesos in collections is including both principal and interest payments. And if that's the case, if you can give us a rough idea of the breakdown of the 9.2 billion pesos in collections between principal and interest payments. Third question on the Radiopolis.
Nicolas, before we forget the first two, let us address those two.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, let me start by the you know how we why we said that the sale is going to be up to 1.5 billion pesos. And this is basically related to that we need the approvals from the authorities, right? So at this point, they are worth 1.5 billion, but in the meantime, I don't know how much it's going to take, whether it's going to take one more or longer or less than that. But in the meantime, if we receive payments, clearly it's going to be less than the 1.5 billion. So that's basically why we stated it that way. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yes, okay, it does. Thanks, Carlos.
Yes, and regarding the second part, the collection part, did you want to tell me, Renata?
Yeah, regarding the collections, basically we include principal and interest. Of course, we can send you the breakdown of how we integrate this figure.
Yeah, and this is clearly related. I mean, if you think in terms of the collections, especially for the payroll business, as a rule of thumb, it would be, I don't know, 50-50 or something like that, or a little bit higher than that. That's as for the payroll business. As regarding the other lines of business, it's going to be, I don't know, it's not as straightforward because it depends on the duration of the loans and also on the yield. But as Renata mentioned, we will provide you with further details of that.
Okay, but basically the principal payments were much lower than the origination, than the 7.2 billion pesos, and that explains why the loan book still grew. I was just trying to reconcile the growth of the loan book with this high amount of collections, but I think that explains it. Carlos, one thing, on the sale of the SME business, I think what was pending was use of proceeds. If the priority would be, if you get approval from the regulators before February, to use that money to pay the Swiss bond.
Look, if you look at what the shareholders meeting approved was to use the proceeds of those things to buy back bonds, and that's how we are considering at this point.
Okay, and one more thing, SME loans in Mexico, you are done with those divestments, right? Only pending would be the U.S. business, used car loans in the U.S.
I mean, that's not necessarily the case. I mean, what's definitely going to happen is that the unwinding of that book will continue in the following months. As you might remember, you know, at the beginning of the year, we made a compromise of reducing the exposure of that particular business to something around the 15%. And now I can tell you that I'm quite confident that we will make it. And this is definitely going to help us in terms of the NIM, not only in terms of the leverage, but also in terms of the NIM. So that's how we are seeing things at this point.
Perfect, Carlos, thanks. Last two questions. Radiopolis loan, can you confirm that before you are able to sell the asset that you got, those shares in Radiopolis, that you are not going to release the 45% coverage of the 695 million peso loan? You're going to keep that as a cushion in case you have losses when monetizing that asset?
Correct. That's exactly what we are going to do. I mean, this is all related to monetizing the asset.
Okay, perfect. And last question, provisions for loan losses. You give a breakout of provisions per business segment. There was a big jump in provisions for loan losses for payroll loans, more than 250 million pesos in this quarter, even though the NPL ratio actually didn't move, actually it even declined a bit. What was the reason for that big jump? Are you seeing anything in the outlook which worries you about payroll loans, and that's what explains the jump in provisions?
No, actually, if you compare the figures to last, Nicolas, what I was mentioning, I'll start all over again. It was regarding the provisions of the payroll line. You could see that quarter over quarter, they were pretty stable. The only situation was that in last quarter, we have extraordinary recoveries on the payroll side. So at this point, if you see the recoveries, last quarter, it were around 300 million pesos, and right now we have them on a normalized basis of around 150 and 200 million pesos. But this is a level when we feel comfortable on the payroll side, and you could see that on the non-performing loan, we have a slight improvement quarter over quarter, and this is in line with the collections that we got from payroll. Actually, the collections of this quarter on the payroll business, there were the highest collections that we had since the end of 2019. So we are not foreseeing any deterioration on the portfolio of payroll.
Thanks, Renata. One quick follow-up there. If you are saying then, if I understood correctly, the recoveries in payroll loans were very high in the prior quarter. Therefore, so the normal number is the 252 million pesos from this quarter or the 76 from, it sounds like this quarter's figure of provisions for payroll loans specifically is more like a normalized number then.
It is this quarter. The normalized number, it is this quarter. If I recall correctly, what happened last quarter is that we collected from charge-off accounts something around 80 or 90 million pesos that were, you know, basically that, charge-off accounts.
Okay. Thanks very much, Carlos and Renata.
Thank you, Nicolas.
Thank you. Your next question is coming from Carlos Alvarez from Appalach. Your line is live.
Well, good morning, Carlo Renata. Thank you very much for the call. I have two questions. The first one is, what will be the revenue composition we'll be looking for during 2022, given the sale of assets in the SME segment? And the second question is, the rebate from the lower rate financing obtained by the credit, will you consider lowering the internal rate of financing?
Sorry, Carlos, we couldn't get the questions. Can you repeat it?
Okay. What will be the revenue composition you will be looking for during 2022, given the sale of assets in the SME segment? And my second question is the rate from the lower rate financing obtained by Instacredit. Will you consider lowering the internal rate of financing?
Yes, I mean, if you recall, Carlos, at the beginning of the year, one of the things that we aimed for was to have a concentration in the payroll business above 60%. And I think, and that continues to be the case. I mean, what we are seeing is that the business will continue, you know, to ramp up. You know, as you might know, you know, the normalization of the economy here in Mexico is already taking place. So we feel optimistic that at some point, I don't know, probably the payroll book should amount something around 65% or something like that. And definitely on the SMEs front, it's going to be under 10%. As for the rest of the products, they should remain rather stable as you see them now. I think that the major shift that you are going to see is in when speaking about the composition, is going to come from the side of the, you know, the payroll and increasing the concentration in the payroll and decreasing at the same token with decreasing the concentration in the SME front. And finally, you were mentioning something about interest rates in Instacredit?
Yeah.
Yes. What was the question? We just heard those two parts, interest rates and Instacredit.
Well, you consider lowering the internal rate of financing.
Yes, actually, Instacredit had a program this quarter where they are getting local resources in order to get cheaper funding and so they can be whole own funded on the market. So what we're seeing right now with these placements that they made that were something around $19 million is that they are also having an improvement on the cost of funds given that they have they achieve an interest rate of something around the 6% compared with the 12 or 14% that they used to have.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Your next question is coming from Gilberto Garcia from Barclays. Your line is live.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for the call. My first question is on the payroll business. There was a fairly marked improvement in the yield, even though the stated interest rate that you have in the press release actually declined a little bit quarter on quarter. So I was wondering if you could give us some color as to what drove this improvement in yield.
Yeah, the main driver, hi Gilberto, the main driver came from the, you know, from the FAMSA portfolio acquisition. That definitely explains a good portion of the improvement in the yield as for the payroll business is regarded. Also, it's worth to mention that if you recall the relief program specifically for the IMSS, that lasted until August last year. So now that all the relief programs, not only the IMSS, but all the relief programs have come to an end, definitely you can see the effect of that over the year, the yield.
Okay, but just to better understand the change in the composition, because looking at the breakdown that you give, it doesn't seem like the numbers, the composition change all that drastically from the second quarter to the third quarter, but the yield went up by almost 500 basis points. What like, did you have any did you recognize any extraordinary income that helped the stated financial income for that business?
No, it's basically what I mentioned. It's basically what I mentioned, but definitely we can take this question further offline. I mean, with Renata, she will provide you more color.
Okay, great. Thank you. And then on the SME sale, I understand that the 1.5 billion figure includes both the principal and the premium, but looking at the percentage of the portfolio that you are saying you're selling, it seems that the premium is a let's say marginal number. Can you comment specifically on what this premium is?
Yes, Gilberto, basically the number that we are providing it's the outstanding balance plus the premium.
Well, probably to put it differently, what we expect is that we are selling that portfolio over par, meaning the outstanding balance plus a premium, and that's what we would expect.
Can you comment on the specific amount of premium that you expect to receive?
It can be as high as 100. It can be a 6% of their over par value.
Okay, and a last question. There was a fairly significant increase in your other accounts payable over ₱1 billion or some $50 million on a sequential basis. Can you comment what was this increase driven by?
The increase in what, Gilberto? Can you reformulate your question, please?
Yes, accounts payable, other accounts payable in the quarter went up by...
I know what you mean. You know, traditionally, the payments that we make to the distributors, in particular, for example, the rebates that we paid and so on and so forth, they normally happen the second week of every month. So that's something natural, right? So that's basically that increase was settled, you know, in the first couple of weeks in September. That's basically the case, but that's normally how it works.
Okay, and then a last one on the Radiopolis loan. Do you have an estimate of how long it could take to monetize the shares and I guess also the rest of the foreclosed assets that you have had in your balance sheet for some quarters now? Do you have any time frame or let's say deadline from your external auditors before you have to impair these assets?
Yeah, I mean the you know, basically, the first part of your question, the best way to address your question is that all those assets are tested for impairment, right? So as long as that continues to be their value, you will see it that way. However, I mean, it is important to say, and I mentioned this in the previous calls, is that definitely monetizing those assets, whatever is not productive, is one of the priorities that we have in the company. So definitely we're looking for all the alternatives, but the economic landscape in the past months, they haven't been so helpful, and we will expect to see some progress in that regard in the next couple of months or something like that. As for the Radiopolis deal, I mean, what I can tell you is that we see, you know, for starters, I mean, you have to bear in mind that that's the largest radio station in the country. So we've received interest from several parties already, and we're working on that. I mean, it's also worth mentioning that this happened a couple of weeks, less than a couple of weeks ago. So we feel confident that we will monetize those assets rather soon, you know, in light of all the interest that has been shown right now, but hard to say. I mean, I'm confident that we will monetize them soon. That's my take on that.
Okay, thank you. And a very quick follow-up, just to confirm, following up on I think what Nicolas asked about the extraordinary recoveries, these recoveries go through the PLL in the provisions line, right?
Yes, the recoveries are included within the provision for loan losses line. Actually, you have the disclosed in that paragraph where you can find the amount of recoveries that we have on the quarter. This quarter, it was something around 200 million pesos.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Your next question is coming from Nick Dimitriev. Your line is live from Morgan Stanley.
Hi there. Good afternoon. Many of my questions have been asked, but I still have a couple left. The first one is on your revenues. So we are seeing an increase in revenues, which is obviously a welcome thing. But in your case, there was a 16% jump in the interest income quarter over quarter. And when I calculate the net interest margin expanded by 250 basis points quarter over quarter. And in the earnings release, you gave a couple of reasons, right? The removal of negative carry, improved portfolio mix, high yield in the U.S. Used car business. I guess my question is, first, you know, this increase in the margin is very dramatic, 250 basis points quarter over quarter. And how sustainable is that, right? When I look at your margins historically, right? In early 2019, your net interest margin was north of 18%. So you still have a lot more room to go if you want to improve your margins based on the mix. But in the coming couple of quarters, where do you see NIM going, and how do you explain that very strong increase in the margin of 250 basis points quarter over quarter?
Yeah, Nick, I mean, as we were mentioning, you know, mostly it was driven by the FAMSA deal, right? And especially if you think in terms of year over year and also in terms of quarter over quarter, it's mostly explained by the FAMSA deal. On the other hand, I mean, what happens is the normalization of the, you know, the economy in Mexico is definitely helping. That's definitely also helping when it comes to that, right? So I would assume that those are the key aspects of that recovery that you are seeing in this quarter. And one, I'm thinking about what we would expect for the future to happen. I mean, on the first hand, if you look at the organization and the origination of the breakdown of the origination, specifically speaking about the payroll business, there's going to be an improvement in the following months with the teachers. We haven't been originating with the teachers in the past few months, and we are about to start originating with the teachers again in the future. So definitely, if you think about the teachers, I mean, they are one of the products with the highest yield. So definitely, that's going to have an improvement. You know, overall, it's going to lead to an improvement in the yield of the payroll business, right? And that's how we see things. If you ask me about the consolidated NIM or the consolidated yield, I think it's going to be positively affected by the change of mix that we will show in the next couple of quarters, I assume. You know, due to the, you know, to the sale of assets and the unwinding of the SMEs portfolio, definitely will lead to an improvement in the NIM. So all in, what I can tell you at this point is that if you remember what I told you guys at the beginning of the year, that we were aiming for something around 13 to 14%.
Yep.
Now that we don't have the negative carry, and with these changes in mix and the improvement in the origination with sectors more, you know, with government agencies more profitable, I would see that it's going to be something around the 14% range by the end of this year. That's how I see things.
Okay, got it. And then you mentioned that you want to keep liquidity in terms of cash and cash equivalents at roughly around $1.5 billion. Is that the critically low or the normal amount? Because I understand that was the balance prior to COVID-19, but the reality is that the balance sheet is larger, right? So one can argue that, you know, in relative terms, the liquidity might be on the low side. So I was wondering whether that's more like the critical minimum or you think it's kind of the normal going forward.
I would say it's more on the normal side, and especially if you think it this way. I mean, if you look at all the pressure that we have this year on the profitability of the business due to the negative carry, it amounts to roughly $400 million or something within that range. So, I mean, and if you think on the other hand, if you think that the cost of funds right now stands above 11%, we need to be very efficient, you know, with regard to the, you know, to the cash balances. So I would say, and if you look in the history of the company, normally we have liquidity, normally we have outstanding balances in cash and cash and equivalents around these $1.5 billion.
Okay. And then I guess, well, it's not my last question, but InstaCredit, the $19 million that were issued out of InstaCredit, that is secured, right?
Yeah, most of the local lending for InstaCredit is secured.
It is secured.
You know,
yep.
It's secured. Secured.
Oh.
Yeah,
okay.
so this was another secure transaction.
Understood. And in terms of capacity, how much more do you think that you can issue out of that, right? I'm mindful of the fact that, you know, we are obviously subordinated to secured creditors.
They still have an aggressive plan of continue growing their operations in Central America, so we think that they could be achieving more placements in the following months.
Yeah, and the program is, if I recall correctly, something around 100, 110 million. You know, the program is worth 100 and 110 million, and these first issuance was something around the 18 million. I mean, but something to bear in mind is that this is not new. I mean, secured lending is not new for the company because, as I was telling you, most of the lending over there is secure.
Okay. And then I guess my last question is going to be, so one of the businesses that you've highlighted as being a non-core potentially for divestment is the U.S. auto business. And you did talk about kind of the positive momentum in that business in your earnings statement. Can you give us an update in terms of where you are in selling that business?
Look, I mean, as it was approved by the shareholders meeting, I mean, the decision that they made was to sell that particular business. I mean, if you look at that, it took us 5 years, you know, to be where we are, you know, speaking about Cruzapine. And, that's a decision that the shareholders made, so we have to comply with that. I think, I mean, in that regard, what we are seeing is that business is at its peak at this point, meaning that if you look at the, you know, the used car prices, they have a skyrocket, you know, due to the, you know, all the problems with the supply chains and the semiconductors and things like that. So I don't know. I think it would seem, you know, and the rationale behind the decision of approving the sale of that business is that it would seem like the right time to do it. But that's, I mean, probably the you know, in short, I would say that was a decision made by the shareholders, and we have to fulfill it.
Okay, understood. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Nick.
Thank you. Your next question is coming from Natalia Corfield from J.P. Morgan. Your line is live.
Hi, Carlos, Renata. Thank you for taking me. I think I have few quick questions. My first one is just a follow-up on Nick's questions on NIM and the growth in top line. You were saying that the FAMSA portfolio is one of the main drivers of that. And I'm wondering, where is, like, the portfolio, the FAMSA portfolio, is it classified in others? And I'm asking that because I'm looking at your origination, and I see increasing in origination of payroll lending, but it's not significant. So I'm wondering where this portfolio is. Is there or is in others? That's my first question.
No, Yeah, the origination of payroll, it is completely recorded on the payroll line. What you see on the others line, it's basically the other part of the agreement that we have with Grupo FAMSA, which is related to financing durable goods.
Right. But then, it, as said, origination is increasing, but it's not significantly. So is this portfolio, does this portfolio have a higher yield?
A higher yield? Yes, it does have a much higher yield. I mean, just remember that we bought that portfolio last January, and the price we paid for that portfolio was something around 40%. So it definitely has a much higher yield, as you can see it on the both on the yield and the NIM side.
All right. And on the sale of SME loans, are you guys done with that, or do you have more to do this year or like next year?
Yes, we will continue to see opportunities to unwind that portfolio or to sell portions of that book.
All right. So there is more to, like, do you have an idea of how much more you're planning? Because initially you said like $100 million. This time was around like $75 million. How much more do you think you can?
This was the first tranche. I mean, definitely this was the first tranche. And as for the rest, it's hard to say at this moment. I mean, we still have to complete this transaction. But I would say that we could get, you know, as I mentioned at the beginning, 100 million, but definitely we could go as high as 150 altogether, you know, including these 75 plus the other, I don't know, an additional 75 million. That's my view at this point, but we'll still have to, you know, run the whole process.
All right. So you're still in conversations for future sales.
That is correct.
Right. And then lastly, on the foreclosed assets, do you have any updates on how things are moving? I think you have said that a portion of it could materialize before year end. Do you have any news?
No, I mean, what we are seeing is that those things are entirely related to the performance of the economy. And as you might know, the economy over here hasn't performed as good as the U.S. has. So, I mean, we're still working. I mean, as I mentioned, this continues to be one of our top priorities over here for the business to monetize those assets. And that's what we are. You know, in the meantime, we continue to, you know, to look for opportunities and to find the best solution for those cases.
Okay. And like, just a last thing that just crossed my mind. On the drop of your cash balance, I was trying to reconcile looking at your cash balance at the end of last quarter plus your collections, led your origination, the reduction on debt. I think it would be very useful if you could provide a reconciliation. I don't know if that's possible, but it would be very useful.
We definitely can do that. I mean, we will provide you those figures offline, but we will consider to if we issue some type of reconciliation in the next couple of days. I mean, but that's as transparent as cash.
Sounds very good. Thank you very much, Carlos and Renata.
Thank you, Natalia.
Thank you. Your next question is coming from Jamie Nicholson from Credit Suisse. Your line is live.
Hi, thanks for the call. I'm wondering if you repurchased any bonds in the third quarter, and if so, what amounts and what tenor? And then you also mentioned that you repurchased 10.8 million shares of your equity during 2021. I'm wondering if any of that was repurchased in the third quarter. That's my first question. And then my second question is, just given that it potentially takes 2 to 3 months to collect on this announced portfolio sale and where your cash position is now, what are your strategies for refinancing the 2022 Swiss bond, just given that it's about 3 months away? So it seems like it's quite tight if you're waiting for proceeds from the portfolio sale. Thank you.
Hi, Jamie. Yes, I mean, no, as regards as the shares that we bought back, those all, you know, all those shares were made in the prior quarters. We did not back any shares during the third Q, and this is similar to the, you know, with regard to the bonds. We haven't bought by anything this quarter in terms of the bonds. We will start in the following weeks, I assume. And definitely the one that looks more, you know, attractive at this point, given its valuation, is the 28. But we'll see. We still are working on that one. And you know, when it comes to the, you know, to the Swiss bond, as it should, our base case scenario continues to be to refinance it in the Swiss market. At the same time, we have developed a broad toolkit, I mean, which would allow us to address any contingencies, you know, what I'm talking about at this point is, this includes, I don't know, syndicated facilities such as the one that we've issued with you guys in the past, or the MTN program, or the cash, and also the cash generated by our operations altogether, as you saw this quarter. So we are still working on that. We need to, you know, to get feedback from the figures this quarter, but we feel optimistic, and as I was telling you at the beginning, our base case scenario continues to be to refinance it on the Swiss market.
Okay, thanks. And then just another question relating to the sale of the a portion of the SMEs. Given that you're selling that at a premium, I assume those are all performing loans. So I'm just wondering that whether following the sale, your remaining portfolio would have an increase in NPLs as a percentage of your portfolio, and whether, if that's the case, do you still expect to meet your 3.2 to 3.8% NPL target by the end of the year? Thanks.
Yeah, no, it won't have a material effect. It won't have any material effect on the NPL ratio. It has to be something around, I don't know, it's probably going to be something at the maximum, you know, 0.2, 0.3%. However, I mean, let's bear in mind that along with the, you know, with the progresses that we made with the Radiopolis case, with the Nuncia excipients, that's going to lead to a major improvement in the NPL ratio, you know. So that's why at some point we mentioned that we would expect to have pre-pandemic levels of NPLs, you know, ones that we are able to monetize, you know, the ones that we finish with all the things that we are making for collecting that particular loan.
Okay. All right. Thank you, and thanks for taking my questions.
No, thank you. Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you. Your next question is coming from Miguel Garcia from Citibank. Your line is live.
Yes, good morning. Can you specify what's the committed and drawn borrowing capacity that you have as of the third quarter? And just another quick follow-up on foreclosed assets. Can you also specify what's the attrition? How many assets are basically forming up that line item? And why has it been so slow, the actual monetization, if it's mostly real estate? Thank you.
Yeah, hi Miguel. You know, with regard to the undrawn back lines, they are in the range of 15 to 20%, something like that, within that range, 15 to 20%. However, we're in discussions with several banks and that will increase that capacity. But at this point, as of the end of the third year, that is due to something within the range I'm mentioning, 15 to 20% of undrawn back. On the other hand, if you look at the foreclosed assets, believe me, I'm the one which is most interested in selling those, in monetizing those assets. Yeah, they are mostly real estate. They are something around nine or ten different pieces of land of real estate. But as you might know, here in Mexico, the situation, the economy is not performing just as good. And that's basically what I believe that's stopping us. However, I would expect to have some more color or to see some progress with this regard in the next couple of quarters or something.
Thank you. Your next question is coming from Jonathan Schwartz. Your line is live from DebtWire.
Hi, Carlos, Renata, how are you? A few questions. One is on accounting on the Radiopolis loan. Now that you recover the shares, will that be moved from the normal loan book to the foreclosed assets?
That's going to be a decision of the we have to discuss that decision with the auditors. At some point, it's going to be on the either on the foreclosed assets or invest. I don't know. It depends on the how the whole deal is struck at the end of the day. But definitely, it's going to be in somewhere in foreclosed assets or investment in shares. Investment in shares. If we get the stock of this radio station or something in between, but you know, it's too soon to say. As I was mentioning, this just happened a couple of weeks ago. What we know for sure is that's going to lead to a major improvement in the consolidated NPL ratio of the company.
But either way, if it's shares or foreclosed assets, it will be moved out of the loan portfolio.
Correct, but that's going to depend. That's something that we need to work out with the auditors.
Okay, and the second question is, if I listen correctly, you said that today the SME portfolio is 17% of the total, I mean before the 1.5 sale, and slide 5 says it's 22.8, and even if you subtract the 1.5 billion, it's still around 20.
No, what we are saying is that once that we complete this 1.5 billion sale, it would reduce the exposure to the SMEs book to 17%, something in the 17%. But as of the end of the third year, the concentration for the SME portfolio stood at the 22%+.
Yeah,
Jonathan, and just to highlight, Carlos is talking about the SMEs Mexico portfolio.
Ah, okay. So not
which
the total SME.
Something around the 21% as of this quarter.
Ah, okay. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you. There are no further questions in the queue. I will now return the call to management.
Thank you very much, you all, for your participation.